Hi, I'm Karen Webster, and welcome to The Matchmaker Is In. Today, I'm joined by Andrew McConnell, the CEO of Rented.com. Andrew, thanks for joining me today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And we're here to talk about a very interesting set of matches that you are making, not necessarily by people who are looking for a place to rent, but those who have places to rent, namely vacation homes, with property managers that can take the friction out of that process for them. So give us a little backstory about why you decided to approach this particular market in this particular way.
It's kind of a funny creation story because it's not a market I knew anything about when I came up with the idea. I was having lunch with a couple of family friends that started talking about VRBO, and they found that they both were using VRBO. They both owned vacation homes, and I had never heard of VRBO, and so I was really curious why they were so animated and excited about this website. So I asked, what is this VBRO? And they immediately corrected me. No, VRBO, Vacation Rent by Owner. It's this fantastic site that lets us rent out our homes ourselves. And we used to have to work with these local management companies, and they were terrible. They would charge a lot of money, and now we get to keep all the money. So, wow, that sounds great, keeping all the money versus just a portion of it. I guess I have a question. How do you know it's not high school students renting your house to throw their prom party? Because I know when I was in high school, we would always try to throw parties at our parents' house when they were out of town. This seems way lower risk. If I could go on the internet and just rent a house, we would throw parties at strangers' houses. And they said, well, you know, I have to vet every renter and make sure on LinkedIn they're over 25 and look into things. But okay, fair enough. And then I asked, well, how exactly do you get the place clean and keys to people? Because you live in Boston and your house is in Vermont and you live in Atlanta and your place is in Justice, Florida, you said. And I said, well, we have to hire a local company that does the cleaning and have a separate person that goes and gets the keys to each person. And one chimed in, well, I had to actually switch people because some things had gone missing and I wasn't sure if it was a guest. I said, okay. And I kept asking questions like that and eventually just said, I'm sorry, this actually sounds like a lot of work. You made it sound initially like there was just this website and there was this magic thing and all of a sudden you made a bunch of money. And they said, well, yeah, you know, I don't really play golf or kind of see my family anymore. This is what I do. I said, okay, but you're a cardiologist and you're a dentist with your own practice. Your time's worth several hundred dollars an hour. That's how you afforded these homes in the first place. And he said, well, okay, I guess if you put it like that, this is starting to sound less like a good deal. And said, okay, so just take me back. You said there were professionals in the state that do this for a living. And as I understand it, you don't change your own oil, much less fix your own car. You go to professionals for things like that. Why are you not working with professionals in this aspect of your life? And they said, well, two main reasons. One, I think these professionals are charging too much. They're not worth the money they charge me. And two, they don't have any skin in the game. They're making me take all the financial risks. And I said, okay, but as I understand it, they don't have their own properties to manage. They can't make money unless they have homes like yours to manage. So why don't you make them commit to a set amount of money that's what you think they're worth, thus making them take the financial risk? You know, create a marketplace where they're bidding against each other to get your home. And both of my parents' friends looked at me like I was an idiot and said, well, obviously, if there was a way to do that, everybody would already be doing that. And so I heard everybody, and that sounded like a big market. So
yep. Everybody's a big market. That's a big market.
Right. So I just that afternoon emailed Mickey Croft, who was a classmate of mine up in Boston, and he had been working in real estate. He played professional baseball for a little bit and then went into the real estate space. Said, hey, have you ever heard of anything like this? Like there's this vacation rental industry, but is there any kind of marketplace where owners find managers and managers have to bid against each other to access these homeowners? And he said he had never heard of it, but every time we'd bring it up, people would say, oh, this is amazing. How do I work with you? And we said, you can't. We don't have anything. We both have full-time jobs. This is just a kind of fly-by-night idea. But at that time, HomeAway had gone public at over $2 billion. Airbnb had raised money at over $2 billion valuation. Now they're at 30. Now HomeAway sold for almost 4. and we said, wait, Airbnb, FlipKey, HomeAway, Wimdu, Nine Flats, all these companies do the same thing. They're all trying to be Expedia or Booking.com for this alternative space, this vacation rental space. But everybody we talk to wants this totally different thing. Why don't we go create that totally different thing? And so that's what we quit our jobs to go do and built what is now Rinna.com.
So the marketplace brings together those with a property to rent, with property managers that can take care of all the hassles that you just described. How did you start? Did you start with telling property managers there was this new cool thing, or did you start with the sites with inventory and tell those sites that there was an opportunity for those particular property owners, that there was a better way for them to manage their properties?
Yeah, I wish it was as clean as just one or the other. I mean, this is the perennial marketplace question, the chicken or egg, which side do you need first? And we really had to go after both at the same time initially, because we didn't know which side was going to be more difficult, which side was really going to drive growth. And what we learned was owners, theoretically, because we were literally the only, and still are, the only website in the world that does this, that creates this competitive marketplace for managers and guaranteed income for the owners, they were very easy. As soon as they heard about what we were doing, they'd say, wow, I didn't know this was even a possibility. Please, how can I work with you? And so what we learned was, getting a bunch of those owners where we did not have managers was wasted effort on our part and the owner's part.
Yep.
So
yep.
Our real task is finding good managers who were really looking to grow and could do good guarantees, and then being responsive to their specific needs. And so
No, go ahead.
I would say initially, just because the idea came from owners, that was our initial set of conversations. Then to validate the idea, we went and did a set of conversations with the professional manager side, and they very positive response there. But neither of those were customers, right? That was just validating, is there a business here that could work? Then when we actually went to market, what we did was sign up a bunch of owners initially, and then would take it to managers. The difficult part was, if the manager wasn't open to doing guarantees or didn't want that specific inventory, that was just wasted effort. So we kind of tweaked it at that stage and said, okay, let's go sign up a handful of managers that will just go work directly for them for their specific needs and get really good at acquiring targeted homes and homeowners.
So how did you decide where to do that? Because I think you raised a good point, which is, you know, density is obviously quite important, of both the supply of property managers as well as the supply of rental properties. Did you identify hot places where people wanted to make book vacation rentals? How did you decide where to start geographically?
Yeah, so it was proximity. It was kind of a two by two, proximity to us geographically and size of the overall market. So we looked at things like HomeAway's top markets and FlipKey's top markets, and then said, okay, well, from Atlanta, this whole panhandle is probably the closest. And it happened that my co-founder used to have a real estate license and work in Pensacola, so he had some contacts there. So that was our very first market we went to. Then we ended up doing an accelerator program in Durham, North Carolina. And so the Outer Banks was our next market. And then kind of close to there, and I was in Atlanta, he lived in Durham, Hilton Head was kind of in between, and I had an aunt that lived in Savannah, so we could stay with her. So that was our next market. And then once we had those three, then managers started coming to us, and we could add Orlando, Miami, San Diego. For us, the way we were acquiring owners didn't really matter where those owners were located, because the homes may be in Orlando, but the owner may live in Bogota. And so at that stage, we became much less geographically focused in terms of confining to the Southeast, and just focused in terms of where we knew we had demand already.
And is the demand specifically around vacation rentals? I mean, obviously the Panhandle, Outer Banks, Orlando, you know, there's some seasonality associated with that a little bit. How are you thinking about the market and spreading the demand, if you will, across marketplaces or market cities where you're not just renting people places between May and September?
Right. So there are kind of three ways we address that. One is, or four. One is we do wholesale contracts. So we do a full year at a time. So the manager doesn't just buy the peak season or just buy the off-peak. What they're buying is the entire year. And the owner may carve out 4 weeks out of that entire year, two during 4th of July week and two over Christmas. But mm-hmm. it's a full-year contract. So it gets kind of around that seasonality. The other thing that we do is they're future-based contracts. So they typically don't start today or tomorrow. A lot of times they'll start in 2 or 3 months. They give the owner time to get out of their existing contractor relationship or kind of get the home furnished and ready for rental and put up on site so they can start taking bookings. So by being able to push back whatever the right amount of time is, you can kind of get around that seasonality. The third piece is geographic diversity. We have listings in over 700 cities at this stage. So yes, the Panhandle is peak during the summer for rentals, which means the managers don't have a lot of time to try to add new homes. And so mm-hmm. the ski markets do most of our transactions over the summer. But during this time of year, the winter, the ski markets are very busy finding guests. So the beach markets do more deals. So that's, we're kind of counter-cyclical in that, and by being geographically dispersed, we're able to offset that. And then the final piece is Airbnb's really changed the market in that mm-hmm. the fastest growing segment of our business is urban, kind of top 20, mm-hmm. top 25 urban markets within the U.S. And so those are not really subject to cyclicality. That's more competing with hotels for business and leisure travelers.
Yep. How do you ensure that the places that are part of this marketplace are in fact good properties that property managers want to have as part of their portfolio, or do you leave that to the property manager to decide?
We leave that to the manager for the most part. So there's just how the process works. The owner puts it up. It has all the photos and the description. So the first question is, does it fit the kind of home the manager wants to add? Is it in the right neighborhood? Are they only looking for condos and this is a single family home or vice versa? And once it ticks that box, then there's a lot of communication typically back and forth between the two parties to make sure that it's, what we found in this market, it's big. Right, we have some transactions that go over $500,000 for really expensive homes, and it's not mm-hmm. just about the dollar value. Both sides really want to find someone they trust. You don't want to commit to paying someone $500,000 that you don't trust them. And as a homeowner, if you have a house that rents for $500,000, it may be worth $5 to $10 million, and so you're not going mm-hmm. to hand over the keys to that house to just anyone. And so there, it's not just a click of the button and money changes hands. I mean, a lot of times before any check is sent, the manager's physically in the house because they need to set it up for rentals anyway, get it mm-hmm. set with keyless locks and stuff like that. So mm-hmm. The first tier of does it meet my criteria, we work with managers on saved searches and stuff like that to make sure they're filtering. But then before money changes hands, that's typically a more on-the-ground conversation between owner and manager.
It sounds as though you certainly have the density of, you know, the property managers and the portfolio of homeowners that want to take advantage of your service. You're spread across a bunch of cities now. At what point did you and your co-founder realize that you had, you know, to use our word, ignited? Was there a point in time where you said, yeah, this is really going to work? This is a business that we know we can scale.
There are so many different answers to that. One being, we would argue we still haven't scaled it, in that this is a $150 billion global market. We, even today, are the only player doing this. And it's not just us saying that. It's nobody can find another one, which is why we get listings in Isfahan, Iran, and Trinidad, Cuba, and wow, New Zealand, and Phuket. And we don't have managers in those markets. I can't help those people. But people looking for managers in that competition, we're the only place they can come to because nobody else is providing the service at all. And so, yes, you know, we double each quarter. We're getting much bigger, but we're still a drop in the ocean. It's an enormous market, and we can deliver so much more value. And a lot of it is building that awareness. The other side of that is kind of the polar opposite of our first go-to-market conversation. I mean, I was pretty adamant I was going to quit my job the day I came up with this idea. I was saying, okay, this seems really good. And we flew back. We were in Turks and Caicos on a vacation. And we flew back at the airport, and I told the two guys I was having a conversation with, I was like, I'm really going to go start this business. I'm going to do this. And they both ended up listing on the platform. And so, you know, being an entrepreneur, you have to be a little bit deluded. And so to the extent of, oh, we knew we had a scalable business. Well, I knew before I had a business I had a scalable business. That's why I quit my job to go do it. But how many people knew that were wrong? And to the extent that I still don't think we've scaled anywhere near where we want to, I still could be wrong. I hope I'm not.
but it sounds like you've done something that no one else has figured out how to do to get started. I mean, you've created a big marketplace. You've established some barriers to entry, it sounds like, in some key cities. Why isn't there another entrant in this space? What makes this so hard?
It's a fascinating question. I think it may be two-sided. One, I don't think it's sexy enough for most startups. We're not a B2C business. We're not an app. Everybody wanted to be the Airbnb copycat, and then it was all about meta search. And then you get these trends, but this idea of, oh, you're a wholesale market, kind of behind the scenes, nobody's really seeing it. I just don't think that was sexy enough for people to get excited about. Even though if you look at most businesses, it's the one that sell B2B that make money because businesses will pay you money, whereas consumers don't. So I always thought the sexier business was the one that made money, but I think most people think the other way around. They think the sexier business is about user growth and app downloads and stuff like that. So I think that's part of it. The other side is just we are relentless in the sense that I think we were right at the wrong time. I initially had this idea back in 2012 and created this concept of guaranteed rentals to the extent that I wrote the Wikipedia page. If you go to Wikipedia and look up guaranteed rentals, that's the page that I wrote. That's kind of created this concept where managers would bid against each other to buy the whole year from another. And if there are 15,000 managers in the U.S., there are probably less than 10 that were willing to do guarantees at that time. And each year that number goes up a little bit. We'd go to these conferences and I'd talk about this concept and 99% of managers say, absolutely not. I would only lose money. That's a terrible idea. I would never do that. The next year, ooh, we're losing a lot more owners to VRBO and other things. We might look at this the next year. Hey, I actually downloaded the contracts from your site and I started trying to do some of these deals directly with owners. So we might want to start working with you. And so it was, this was not even close to an overnight success, right? It was, we did this before it made sense to do it.
Right.
And we just stuck at it a lot longer, right? I gave up a very high paying job to make zero money and throw a bunch of money down the drain over a number of years to position ourselves to be here when the market turned.
So let's talk a little bit about the business model. So how do you make money? How do the property managers make money, and why are they now so enamored with the idea of guaranteed rentals when they weren't before?
Yeah, so we make money only from the managers, homeowners, we don't want them to have to do math. We don't want to take a cut of what they receive, anything like that. So the number they see is the number they get, clean and simple and easy. The managers, we charge a subscription fee annually as a kind of gating mechanism to make sure that we only have serious managers we even bother spending time with. And then we do separate background checks and stuff to make sure they're good and operationally and financially solvent. And then they pay us success fees. So each listing kind of has a price that if they end up signing that contract, that's what they pay us over the course of the year.
So sorry, go ahead. No, go ahead. Keep going.
No, that's fine. That was it. That was where we make our money.
Does your platform enable the property managers and the property owners to communicate? Do they send money electronically to the property owners through your platform? How involved is the platform from a servicing perspective?
Yes, so it's very much what we learned is not a pure auction. It is a matchmaking function, and so messaging became incredibly important. And when you create a marketplace, you're always afraid of disintermediation. Mm-hmm. And I think probably too much so in terms of putting all sorts of filters up. And maybe not too much though, right? I mean, we used to charge a ton of money up front because we were so worried we'd get cut out and do all sorts of things. And over time, we've just taken down those walls more and more and more to create more transparency, more connection between the two sides of the marketplace. Mm-hmm. Which I think you've seen Airbnb and a bunch of these others, it's wide open. Maybe they make it hard to send a phone number and email, but you can even hack around that. But there is a lot of direct communication. I think that's important in this space.
Yeah. And so you do provide, you know, your platform doesn't just make the match. It does provide lots of other ways for the two sides of your platform to do business. It would also seem to me that that's where you can add additional value to keep both of those sides pretty sticky.
Yeah, and we want to build more of that over time. I mean, there are a number of things we do. We have our standard contract that we worked with one of the top firms in the industry that did, like, eBay's real estate contract and RCI's contracts. We did that 3 years ago, before we had money to really afford those attorneys. We worked with them to make sure we had the industry standard contract. And now that's what other managers who haven't even started working with us downloaded to use for this. And so having a consistent contract makes it apples to apples when owners are looking to compare those managers. And so the whole communication, contract negotiation process, the contract signing to be able to download and access your contract, all of that's on the platform. Payments are on the platform as an option. Most managers have their own systems in place with all their existing homeowners. And so for accounting reasons, it gets difficult to peel it out and just do our one home separately. But that is an option that some managers take, especially ones that are just getting started, because we can do it more cheaply than they can and do those direct deposits. But, yeah, we certainly offer a lot more than just, hey, here's one party, talk to the other party. We found that we need to deliver more and more. And I think that's going to be – we're not at the end of that journey. That's something that we're going to keep wanting to add more and more value that we deliver to those two sides.
It sounds like that you let the owners and the property managers have their own relationships and do their own thing independent of you getting in the way. But you also must have to play a governance role to make sure that you're bringing the right property managers in, that they're behaving, that property owners are treated fairly. What are your thoughts and what are your practices with respect to governance on your platform to make sure that property owners continue to get the great experience with the property managers that you have on the other side?
Yeah, there are all sorts of checks and balances in there. I mean, one is just by opening that messaging back and forth, the owners get a pretty good feel even before. A lot of times they meet them in person, And just because the manager might not be the right fit for you, they could be the right fit for someone else, because it's not necessarily they're the bad fit because they're a charlatan. It could be, oh, they're a big corporate company and I actually want the local boutique with only 25 homes under management because I want the real personal service. And so we leave that part open. The filters that we put on the manager in the first place is, you know, you have to pay to get in the marketplace. So this isn't some high school kid that's just looking to manage an Airbnb. We have certain managers are rented certified, so this is where we partner with Equifax and mm-hmm. do legal, financial, and operational background checks. And if they get that seal of approval, that meets a certain standard. And then we have a totally next tier that's our rented back program, where we will actually do the guarantees because we trust so much in that particular manager in that particular market. So wow. there are all those different tiers in there. And then our ears are always open. So if owners come and complain, which they have, we have over 700 managers, but we've had to fire three over mm-hmm. the course of our existence. So if there's a bad actor, whether it's with an individual homeowner, they're not delivering on their promises or contractual obligations, or they're just trying to do something that doesn't seem right in the marketplace, we just kick them out. They don't have access to our market or our homeowners.
In the time that we have left, there's so many other things I'd love to talk to you about. It's a fascinating business, and I love hearing all the details. But I want to close with just getting your thoughts on other matchmakers that, as you and your co-founder took these steps and this journey to create your own matchmaker marketplace, who did you look to as inspiration? I mean, clearly, Airbnb is one of them that you cite, but any in particular that, as you thought about the business then and think about scaling it and adding additional features now that you pay close attention to?
The one you mentioned is by far the biggest leading light for us, Airbnb, and really reading their stories and then meeting the various co-founders. One of the co-founders actually from here in Atlanta. His dad was on the city council in Brookhaven. And just talking with them and kind of learning the trials and tribulations they went through and what ended up ultimately working for them, which they attribute to professional photos. And that wasn't going to be the same for us because that wasn't really the bottleneck. But knowing, you know, you had to keep kind of poking away, hacking to figure out what is the thing that's going to get you from 0 to 1 and 1 to 10, 10 to 100. It's not a static answer. And so they were definitely instrumental looking just at the space. HomeAway, with what they did with VRBO and the others, it was more a private equity play and just buying up a bunch of companies, which wasn't really open to us. But mm-hmm. by doing it and going public, they published a ton of data just in their S-1 filing that was really useful and put out a ton of data because they had so much customers, so many different customers across the country and across the world. So talking to their executives and looking at the stuff that they put out was really, really helpful. And then, I mean, a lot looking at different things that venture capitalists put out. You know, Bill Gurley writes a lot about this, Simon Rothman at Greylock, Josh Breinlinger at Jackson Square Ventures, and just trying to learn from people who've done this multiple times, not just an individual company that's really taken off, but maybe an investor who's worked with Uber and Airbnb and Upwork and OfferUp. And say, okay, you know, what have they learned across these different experiences that may be applicable to what we're trying to accomplish here?
Final thought. I'm gonna let you give aspiring matchmakers a little word of advice. You mentioned you have to be a little delusional to get into this space because it is very hard, and you know, many matchmaker businesses don't make it because it is very challenging. What piece of advice would you offer someone thinking about establishing their own marketplace or matchmaker?
Be honest with yourself what you're trying to accomplish. I think via the media and everything, everybody wants to be an Uber or Airbnb. and not everybody can or will be $30 to $60 billion company. In fact, 99.9999% will not be. Those aren't things that really happen. And you could serve a very valuable function. You could build an incredibly valuable business with much tamer ambitions. That's a great lifestyle business. It's just if you're going to do that, don't take venture money because they really only want the 30 to 60. So the worst thing you could do is build what, at the end of the day, you would have said, wow, that was a really successful business, but I captured none of the value from it because it was only a $25 million business and every single cent went to investors and none to me or my employees. So really being clear on the front end what your ambition is and how you're going to achieve that.
I think that's very sage advice and clearly advice that I think many matchmakers, even established matchmakers, if it's not too late, should take to heart. I think it's very, very valuable. And you're right. It's not only be honest with yourself, but be honest with the opportunity that you see in front of you. It doesn't have to be an enormous global friction that you're solving, but it has to be big enough to scale and to create value for the stakeholders and obviously for the entrepreneurs behind it. But those are often the hardest questions to answer truthfully. So I think your advice is right on. Well, Andrew, it was great. It was great to get to know you. Great to get to know your business, and we wish you obviously continued success. Thanks for joining me today.
It was my pleasure. Have a wonderful day.
And you do the same. Thanks to everyone who listened, and until next time, have a great day and a great rest of the week. Thank you.